This is Azia from Fusicology, and I'm here at Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I talk to the Rebels that are shaping youth culture. We find out how they do it, why they do it, and what you can do to get a little piece of the pie for yourself. We're also the only show to bring you new music every week from our friends over at EDM.com. I'm your host, Josh Levine, and today with me in studio is my friend Azia Shine. Azia is the founder of Fusicology. If you're a clubber, if you're into house music, hip hop, drum and bass, what else? Neo soul. Fusicology is your source for where to go in every major city in America. She's been doing it for 15 years, built a really fantastic business, and she's got some great stories from her days in the clubs and some great lessons about, you know, really staying focused on her business, avoiding distraction, knowing her value, and building something in her vision. Great stories coming up from Azia Shine on Rebel Radio right after the EDM.com track of the week. BYOR and Space Food with Get Back, the EDM.com track of the week. If you like that one, get over to EDM.com, check out new music, and let's check out my interview with Azia Shine right now.
Okay. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, thanks. She's been, you know, pushing, like, you know, it's just crazy because it's 15 years and
yeah.
And there's like the Louis thing and it's just like a whole bunch of totally. Stuff happening at the same time.
So. Well, I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah.
We had a great time hanging out at Collision Conference.
We did, which you have to go to the one in Toronto coming up in May. Yeah, great.
Yeah, that was like a cool surprise because I got there and I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
And it was ball. And in Toronto, because that's my hometown, I'm going to be well more connected. Like, I'm already in talking to them about, like, after parties. And they're like, yeah, we're open. I'm like, I'm selling myself like the Toronto person, even though I haven't lived there in 20 years.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then I know we're not here to talk about Susan, but Susan is one of the first publicists I met when I first started my journalism career. You and Jasmine Vega, we met at the same time.
I was working at Such a Run in the TAF building. Oh my God.
And I can't remember who.
Oh my God.
Can't remember which of your clients kind of brought us together. But
you're from something random like Seattle or something, right?
San Francisco.
Oh, it's just San Francisco?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I thought you were a native Angelina.
No, I came for college.
Oh, you went to Loyola.
I went to UCLA. Somehow I can't remember which school I went to, but
so long ago.
I went to UCLA, and that started my journalism career because I started writing for the paper, the Daily
that's
Bruin.
What it was. Yes.
Oh,
which
wow.
Which was an awesome, amazing job because it was daily newspaper.
Yeah.
And so I went in there.
Yeah, because you're younger than me. You graduated like 92 or something.
Three.
Yeah, because I remember when you
high school
were at,
or college.
College.
I remember we're when old. You were at the Daily Bruin.
We're old in this place.
Yeah, we're old.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I remember that is where we met when you were at the Daily Bruin.
Older.
I totally remember Josh Levine and Daily Bruin. I can see it like on my database in my head.
It's okay. So, I didn't graduate college anyway.
Why would you?
Just wet for a few years.
Better things to do.
Yeah, totally.
I went to NYU, so we probably had a similar.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's fun.
Experience of.
That's well, it was so you'll relate to this because so I went in to write for the paper. Not sure why I wanted to do that. I think it was because you get I could get into shows for free.
Of course.
And and I had no writing experience whatsoever, but they kind of let me in.
Really?
Yeah, it was sort of by accident. But it turned out, so I became the rap critic for the paper.
Wow.
Because in 1991, like mainstream college students were all about Soundgarden, Nirvana, whatever.
Yeah, they I no, was.
You know, other, like to them, rap was Run DMC.
Yeah.
You know,
but then it was
Beastie Boys.
Then it was, I was working on Ice Cube and Yo Yo. Those were my first two projects at Cetaron.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I was doing MC Light. And then when I was out here with Jasmine.
You must have hooked me up with Yo-Yo. I interviewed Yo-Yo.
Yeah, I think I did.
The day my dog died and she was like super nice to me.
I totally remember that.
25 years ago?
This is like so long ago.
27 years ago,
it's crazy. But hey, let's talk about you.
Yeah. No, it's cool. This is way more interesting, actually. Like, tell me more.
So we have similar taste in friends and music and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But I want to get into how it started for you.
Sure.
Do you remember the first record you ever bought?
Michael Jackson Bad.
Nice.
Yeah, I was super young. I was probably 5 when it came out, and like 1984, right?
Yeah.
And I was dancing. Like, I'm always a little dancer. I was danced before I could knew how to walk, and I would not stop listening to this record. Drove my parents crazy. I just keep putting it on and on and on. It was my favorite record for like a year.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And were you always just a music kid growing up?
Yeah, my mom's a musician. My mom is a violinist. Mm-hmm. She sings and plays guitar. So, you know, I traveled with her when she was pregnant and, you know, had a violin on my belly growing up, you know what I mean? Or on her belly, you know what I mean? And so my mom's a musician and my dad just like is her roadie, like her fan. He's an engineer, but he was always like, my mom's very popular in the Jewish community.
Okay.
Like, she tours to this day. And so, like, my dad's like her sort of manager. And I started when I was like 7 or so, I think, maybe 8 years old. My parents don't speak English that well to this day. They're from the Soviet Union. Mm. I like saying that. And I had to talk to somebody because they're like, you speak English, talk. And I'm like 7.
Right.
And they were like, we have $200 for your mom. And my mom was like, ask for $250 or something like that. And I immediately negotiated. They're like, who are we talking to? And I was like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I'm talking to you because I speak English and I'm representing my mother. They're like, what is going on? So that's when it really happened.
That's incredible. You know what
I mean? Because I negotiated for my mom because I spoke English better than either my mom or my dad.
Yeah.
So that's really my first memory of how everything got started. And then I like was, I'm a classically trained dancer, ballet, tap, jazz, and all that. So when I like became a rave kid when I was like 14,
mm-hmm.
Toronto, we started young.
Sure.
I didn't want to pay to get in.
Right.
And they were like, you want to pass out flyers at your high school? You're so like energetic and personable. And I was like, yeah. They're like, we'll give you $40 a week, which is huge.
Wow, that's great.
Free weed, I'm just being real. And you don't have to wait in line to get into these places. I was like 14, 15 years old. I was like, hell yeah.
See, in LA, they would just give you, like, they would just let you in.
Like,
so I was doing that in college.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember.
They didn't pay you nothing, right?
No, they didn't pay you anything.
Yeah, Toronto was paying.
They're like, here's your flyers. And like, you know, they were like, if 10 people come with one of these flyers on it that has like your thing,
they
like,
even put my name on the flyer.
Yeah.
It was a party called Pleasure Force.
Nice.
With like drum and bass and all that. Uh-huh. And they put my name on it. It was misspelled. It was AYSA, which a lot of people do. But I was like, I didn't know what to do. And I think that's what I knew.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to do this, man. Like, I like this. Like, I was getting my friends in and all the like pretty girls. And I was 15 years old doing this, you know? And then when I was 16, my parents, my dad's job transferred us to Dighton, Ohio. I had to do the accent because that's how I felt when I moved there. It was complete culture shock.
Yeah.
But I turned out to be the big fish in a small pond.
Sure.
Because I already knew all the DJs, the Derek Carters of the world, these Chicago guys, these Detroit guys.
Call upon the strength within and plan it as your stake. Move forward with power. Program yourself to feel with depth enough to know what's up and heart to sense the real where you're at.
And these people, and I was passing out flyers, and they're like, yo, work for us. So we started doing parties when I was 16 called Booty Ass Jam.
Sounds amazing.
It's amazing. And we had these loft parties. And my boy Kimmy in New York, who is still like a big deal in the art world and the, you know, all that, he brought me on. He was like, you're going to, you know, but then they realized that I knew how to like do other things. My mom let me use her credit card legitimately, and I would book the DJ's flights on these cards. And I started to get into that business. When I was 17, I moved to Detroit. And that's when my life changed. So I met Dwelle in college. I met Slum Village through all that. So I sort of got into that hip hop soul world. But my biggest break was working for Laura Gavoor, who she passed away in 2002. But she was the agent and manager of anyone that mattered in that era. Yeah. Jeff Mills, Derek May, Juan Atkins, Kevin Saunderson, Theo Parrish, Moody Man, Laurent Garnier. You know, we worked with LTJ Bookham, all of that. And I just became her apprentice, her assistant, answering phones. Again, she was like, I don't know this email, internet. You know, you do it. And I was like, right. Okay. And I'm 20 years younger and hanging out with all these people with a fake ID.
Sure.
And then I got a job at Motor Lounge, which was in Detroit, and I and I booked like the first house DJs ever in Detroit, from my understanding, and that was 1996. And then I got that job offer. I was going to Wayne State University. I was studying global climate change, which didn't exist then yet. Sure. It was just called Earth Science.
Yeah.
everything they said that was going to happen did, but about 25 years sooner.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's good times. I got a job offer from Roy Davis Jr. to move to Chicago to work for him. And in 1998, I left Detroit. I didn't finish school. I just took off and I went for it. I had family in Chicago. I loved it. I lived there for a year. it's called winter. I was like, it's colder than Canada here. Like,
really?
Yeah, Chicago is brutal. But
see, all that to me follows into a category called unlivable.
Unlivable.
Like basically anything east of Palm Springs.
Palm Springs.
Like,
you wouldn't. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's actually true. I didn't, and I loved Chicago, but it taught me so much about house music, and I got so involved. And in 1 year, I got to like do so many things because I was working for Roy, and I also managed an artist named Pevin Everett, who did a record with the Gorillaz last year. I worked with him for a decade. Momentary pain can be pleasure lane, millisecond change, magic lantern strains. Are we just too far to be as one again? Are we obsidian? Is this how it is? So that sort of brought me here. And I came out here in February of 2000 to go to Marcus Wyatt's birthday.
Nice.
And quote unquote Grammy week. Not that I had cookups, but I just, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I just turned 21. I was like, I'm legal. I'm in. And I came here and it was like 72 in February. And that was it. Yeah. Like, I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
And then I moved here. And should I continue? Because I've been talking forever.
Is there I mean, that sounds like an incredible journey.
Yeah.
Was there a time when you decided this is going to be my career path?
Yeah. 1994, LTJ Bookham, bringing him back up again. I heard his music, and I was at this rave, and I was probably semi-sober, but I closed my eyes, and I was like, I want to be a part of this. Like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to be an artist because I'm not like my mom. I don't play instruments. I didn't get that. But I was like, I know how to organize. I know how to promote. I want to do this, you know? And then when I moved to Detroit and met Derek May and Laura Gavoor, which was like, I mean, I met people like immediately. It didn't take me like 6 months to meet people. I would meet people before I moved there.
Right.
I just knew that that was going to be my career path, and I never looked back after that. Yeah.
Rebel Radio is brought to you by Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that finds and delivers clothes, shoes, and accessories to fit your body, budget, and style. I got my wife Christy signed up and watched her go through the process. It was really fun. They were asking her all kind of questions about her personal style. Does she want bags? Does she want shoes, accessories, clothes? Does she want fancy stuff, casual, athletic, boho? It's good for her because I just wear black t-shirts every day, so
she can go out and pick all kinds of stuff, and she doesn't like to go shopping. She likes stuff sent to her. It's fun. You get to open a box at the front door, and it feels like you got a present. Just go to stitchfix.com/rebel. You can tell them your sizes, what styles you like, how much you want to spend on each item. They give you your own personal stylist who handpicks items and sends them right to your door. You try them on, pay for what you like, return the rest. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. There's no subscription required. You get your fix whenever you want. You can get scheduled shipments, or you can just hit them up and tell them, send me some clothes. Stitch Fix's styling fee is only $20, which gets applied to anything you keep. Get started now at stitchfix.com/rebel, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all the items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/rebel to get started today. stitchfix.com/rebel.
So, you know, jumping ahead to Fusicology.
Yes.
And, you know, you describe it as, so you were talking earlier about, you use the term progressive music.
Yeah.
And you know, the distinction between that and EDM.
Yeah.
So how do you define that? And how does it change over the years?
It's really changed. I think that's why we, you know, I use a lot of global soul now, because, and even that puts us in a box of like soul music when really we do a lot of dance and hip hop stuff. It's really hard to define music, you know, and to say something as snobby as, well, it's good music, is just that.
Sure.
So it is very hard to define. We used the word urban alternative in the mid-thousands, because that was what the Grammy term was, and then that got kind of weird. I used neo-soul before that.
Yeah.
That was like a bad term after a while.
Of course.
I can't even say the word deep house, because the EDM world
has changed
it. Yeah. That bothers me, because I like listen to something and I'm like, this isn't deep house. This is trancy, weird. You know what I mean? And people are like, no, that's what it is now. It's tough. But what's interesting is the people that are like getting older are still looking for like 90s hip hop and early thousands and Dilla and all that other stuff. And then the newer people are looking at the older music because they want to know where it comes from. Like Odessa and all these bands. If I listen to that, I'm like, wait, is this now? Or is this, you know, Ron Trent from 1997? It sounds the same.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting theory that I have, is not much has actually changed.
Sure.
Still going, it's still a dark club, it's still lights, it's like the same. Yeah. People are even going back to vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think we're lucky, because even though things have shifted, for some odd reason, music 20 years ago sounds almost like it does now, and it's going back to it. It's really tripped out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I've read some things about kind of how we process music, right?
Yeah.
And the idea is that we want things that sound similar but feel new.
Right.
Right, because we don't want to tell ourselves that we're just listening to the same shit over and over.
Right.
But we like the familiar.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. And now, what more than ever, things are coming together, like New Orleans brass music, like Trombone Shorty will tour with like somebody that we know in hip hop. Talib Kweli will hop on a record and do something. And it's completely mashed things up.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of these artists mashing things up, it's becoming like, you know, easier to kind of say, like, Fusicology, because it's been around for 15 years, I think people, not everybody, but most people just sort of get it. For instance, we used to have promoters have to upload their event and I would have to approve it.
Right.
Took that down.
Yeah.
Because no one uploads whack events anymore.
Right,
because they get it.
Yeah.
So I think it's like, it's almost like an unspoken thing, but there isn't a terminology for this kind of music anymore.
Well, and that's the other challenge, I think, is that, you know, progressive by definition keeps changing, because you know what, because mainstream catches on to certain things and then you have to kind of keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I got lucky with like the music that's been coming out over the past, I'd say, 10 years with like Flying Lotus and Thundercat and, yeah, and Robert Glasper, because historically I get this respect from people because of all the, you know, I was Jay Dilla's agent, mm-hmm, and I worked with Questlove and all these amazing people. And because of my previous work, I get the respect from those artists. But yet, because of what I do for a living is sell tickets and promote shows.
Right.
And we've never had competition. Like, I still work with Live Nation and Golden Voice the same way that I work with them 10, 12 years ago, because there's no one else that can sort of do this for them, which is kind of interesting because people have tried.
Sure.
But they're not niche enough. You know, yeah, they you know, you have Do LA, I think they're incredible, right? Yeah. But yeah, it always goes back to that stuff that I don't do, and I sort of almost keep away and filter from Fusicology. I'm really militant, you know, with what goes on that website, you know, and I have
Should to be.
And it's like I've gotten some backlash from people, but again, not recently. Mm-hmm. Recently people are like, now we get what they do. Now, more than ever, I just say black music, mm-hmm, which can be quite controversial coming from a Jewish girl's mouth. And because my business partner's African American, people look at him and are like, do you run this cut? Like, what's, you know? And I'm like, right, but it is black music, you yeah know? Like, that's what, if you want to get unpolitically correct, that's kind of what it is.
Well,
but that's weird too, to put like a thing on it that's racial at all, even though it's the truth.
It is, so, and it's not. Know? I mean, I get it when you say that.
Yeah,
I
know what you're. I just don't want to offend anybody, you know?
Yeah. No, I
especially
understand.
Especially coming from me.
Obviously, that's a charged term. But even still, I think there's even practical questions about, like, well, does that mean the artist is black? Well, sometimes. Does that mean
right
the audience is black? Sometimes.
Right. And then what about rock and roll? That's black music, right, if you want to break it down. In the,
exactly.
You know, it's kind of, it is weird.
Sure.
There's no terminology.
I was talking with a friend who I won't name, who has an events company, mm-hmm, and he's trying to do something really cool. And I was telling him, you know, I love what you do, but it's too white, right? Given the world we live in. And he was like, yeah, you know, we're trying to book more artists of color, let's say. And I said, well, that's great, but that's not it necessarily, right? Because there's lots of black artists, you know, or artists of different backgrounds who, mm-hmm, are making music for white people.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, the drum and bass kids are mostly white.
White, yeah.
Right?
But the artists are black.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a complicated, it's very complicated. I think that's why I started just saying, like, we list events for, you know, I think global soul's the one term that I feel the most comfortable with, because I used to use the word soul diaspora, but then no one knew
right
what
sure
the word diaspora,
yeah,
and
totally
they've connotated too much with
too
Jews,
smart,
and I'm, it's too smart.
Yeah.
And so I just say global soul because everything is soulful that we do,
yeah,
whether it's hip hop or whether it's like something like Hiatus Coyote that is like.
I love you, I do. Watch me struggle with your words. I wear the truth. Oh, they made me.
Well, what genre is that?
Right.
What is that? Like, tell me, because it's everything. You know,
yeah,
to me, that's deep house-y, EDM-y rock
right
with hip-hop. Like, I'm so confused, you yeah know? And then there's someone in the background playing, like, trumpet. Like, I'm like, what is this music? But that's, I think, the point of where we are as
so
a culture.
So what happens if we go back, I forget what year that was.
2013? Yeah, sorry.
When EDM blows up.
Oh, yeah.
Becomes this massive mm-hmm global phenomenon, and you have Skrillex and
Aoki,
all these guys, right? So we know the difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, to the outside world, to the brand world, certainly, but in your casual fan, like, they don't understand the distinction between EDM and what we would call dance music.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what did that do to your business and to what did you see, like, happening in the culture?
It actually helped us a lot because websites that did focus on EDM just were so like, that's what we do, and we
right
sell these big tickets and bottle service in Vegas.
Sure.
And I just was like, I ain't fucking with any of this. Can I right swear?
Yes.
Yeah, I ain't messing with
we
any of this
if
shit.
You do.
Okay, cool. I'm just making sure. And I think because we didn't go that route, and I just kind of stayed away from it,
yeah,
made it even more evident that we're just different, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And also the rise of this sort of new jazz, Kamasi Washington, Terrace Martin thing really helped us because it became so big that it sort of took over. And I knew EDM was gonna die. I was like, sure, this ain't gonna be everything that goes to Vegas.
It always happens.
It always happens. Yeah. And I knew it was anything that goes to Vegas and becomes big and bottle service and DJs getting $2 million, 5-year lifespan at the most, because it's not gonna survive. And even now in Vegas, when I go, I'm hearing better music.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm hearing like pretty decent music. And what's going on? Everyone's like, oh, no, we're not really doing the EDM thing here. And I'm like, oh my God, even Vegas is catching on. And they're always like 5 years behind us. So it's a challenge, but I think you're right. I think what we've worked on is just showing people that it's a niche demographic and that if you want to reach them, we're the partner to reach them with. And I kept it very, very real with other people. If they wanted things that are a little more rock, I would send them to Oh My Rockness. If they wanted more EDM, I would send them to like Do LA or something like that. I'm like, you know, I think it helped that I didn't sell out, like, no offense, but like I was always confused by the Fader magazine back in the day, right? Because it would be, right? Because it would be like Most Def 1 month.
Right.
And then the White Stripes, which is okay, but then it would just like, what is this?
Yeah, it feels schizophrenic.
Absolutely. So we tried really, really hard, I think, to not be that way and to sort of stick within it, even though we've probably lost a significant amount of business.
So how do you do that as a business person, right? Like most, I think the temptation, and you know, I know you play in the media space and in the tech space, and in business in general, the mantra is scale.
Right.
Generally.
Right.
Right. Everybody's looking for something that scales.
Yeah. We've grown in cities. So I've taken the same thing.
Yeah.
And like we were in just New York and LA for 2 years.
Yeah.
3 years. And then built it up at 8 to 8 markets. And then now we're in 25 cities. So instead of changing it up, I've noticed that Salt Lake City has a scene. Yeah. And all of a sudden I just went in. And I added a bunch of events, and now I have my assistant that goes in. We're not big there. I don't know. We have probably no traffic, but it's okay because it doesn't really cost me that much to keep it up and to keep like 20 events, which makes it look good.
Yeah.
That's what we've done. We've more so, I think, you know, expanded in our markets as opposed to the genres within the markets that we're in.
Okay. So yeah, I want to talk about that, but first I want to know, how do you resist the temptation, right? Like, you know, you could look at a Duo LA or a Fader, who I would agree with, like, is not, I don't want to say it's a mistake because that's their business,
do how
they want to do, but it's not how I would do it.
Right.
Right. But you can understand the temptation.
Yeah.
Right. And again, we wrestled with that at Herb, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, this thing's happening over here.
Right.
You could easily make the argument.
Yeah.
Like, you could have easily made the argument that, like, yeah, EDM, that's dance music. That's my thing. I'm going to be the king of all that.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going to drive bottle service in Vegas. And, you know, so what's the thought process? Like, how do you make those decisions?
Well, I'm stubborn.
Good.
As an individual. And also, we got lucky. We never went print. So my costs have been low since the beginning.
Yeah.
And then I've even learned how to do a bunch of stuff that other people were doing for me here and there. And I outsource a lot of work to people, like social media stuff and everything like that. So I've been able to save money on staffing, save money on like just getting elaborate offices and staff and this and that and the third.
Yeah.
The only thing that we really concern ourselves with is tech and sales and, you know, sort of the marketing aspect of it. And social media has really helped.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what you're saying. I just felt like if I did go there, it would maybe only benefit us for the short term, and then people would be like, Fusicology's whack, fuck them, and then we would just lose all our traffic and all of our, people don't unsubscribe to our mailing lists. We've never gone down, we've only risen. It doesn't rise, it's not insane numbers, but it's okay. We also don't buy these numbers, right? Mm-hmm. These are just organic people that go, oh, I wanna subscribe. That's great. So I think it was the fear of the, and plus I just really, really always fought against that scene, you know what I mean? Like living in Detroit, living in Chicago, coming from that world, this is where dance music is from. It's from, you know, these, it's from R&B, it's from Black America. I just felt like I would just sell out and like literally my friends would stop talking to me. So I think it was like the fear of what other people would think, to be honest with you. And then also the knowledge that we're going to make it. Mm-hmm. And because we have these consistent clients like the Live Nations of the world that just sort of automatically come to us like, hey, we have these shows mm-hmm. going on. Go. Here mm-hmm. are the ads. Here, you know, they don't even ask us anymore. They just sort of put us on retainer. Right. I knew that I would sort of, knock on wood, survive mm-hmm. that thing. But it was tough, especially with the economy being really, really bad. Like between 2010 and 2013, like no one was buying ads. I don't even remember how I survived. I just certain brands would, you know, you would get that chunk of money and you would sort of spread it, the love. And I think that's the only way to do it, as opposed to now where it's more micro, like every day people just want ads. I want this blasted. So it's less of a, I need this big client in order to maintain the business, which is great.
Yo, if you're enjoying this one, let's go back in the Rebel Radio archives, check out another great publisher, my man Shiraz Sharian, founder of hiphopdx.com. Some great business lessons in building a publishing business, and you know, one of the toughest industries to be in media right now. And he's a super smart guy and has some great stories to tell. So check that one out after we finish up here with Azia Shine. So my experience, you know, obviously I've been working in events for forever. Brands seem to kind of come in and out.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is back to that scale thing that, you know, if you're deciding where to spend your money, I can reach, you know, 1,000 times as many people in social mm-hmm. than I can at an event. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, before that, they had other excuses, right?
Right.
You know, what do you see with brands?
Well, I see it's interesting because people change. So, mm-hmm. you know, you develop a relationship with somebody at X company and then they're gone. It's the worst. That happens to me like every day of my life. I feel like I have to deal with some new person. And then you have to like you know, hash that. I try not to count on it. What I try to do is I try to get big level events, like I'm doing something during the Grammys, mm-hmm. right? And so I try to just focus on the fact that I know the Grammys are happening. I know they're in LA and I know the date. And so I almost try to like pretend like I don't know who the sponsor is going to be, even though I know I need one. Because I feel like if I have my shit together, one will come to me.
Yeah.
Because if I start, you know, and plus these brands all go through agencies mm-hmm. and these agencies do their own events and they don't care about you and they don't want to get the brand to know you because you're kind of competition, even though I'm not an agency. I feel like everyone thinks I'm competitive with them to an extent because I've created my own little niche.
Totally.
You know what I mean? But I'm not a publisher to that, even though I am. I'm not an event producer, even though I am. I think that staying in my lane and doing something that I'm really, really like known for is the safe bet. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel comfortable anymore with like counting on a brand to sponsor something because it just, they're so finicky.
Yeah.
And I worked with Puma for many, many years. I mean, and then my guy over there, you know, got let go and that was it. I mean,
it happens all the time.
We started our own brand with them called Laced. It was a whole event series for like 3 years with huge name DJs.
Yeah.
I also take it with a grain of salt, like that's the way it works. Like it's just mm-hmm. gonna come and go, come mm-hmm. and go. And then other brands now in the cannabis space, they're sponsoring my event at the Ford, a cannabis cultivation company. Who mm-hmm. would have thought that, right? Like a few years ago, like
yeah, of course.
At the Ford, like it's LA County, you know? They were like, yeah, we're cool with it. Just don't smoke inside the venue. I'm like, yeah, that's what?
Yeah.
They're like, it's legal. And I still had to like think about it.
Sure.
So I think that it's ever changing. It's completely finicky. These agencies they're complete and they change up too. Mm-hmm. You know, you develop something with one of these experiential agencies and you do this one event with them. And again, 90% of the time that person's gone within 3 months.
So, you know, my experience with founders is that over time it's harder and harder to stay so connected to your business.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? You seem to not be suffering from that.
I decided a long time ago that I probably wouldn't have kids and a family, which is kind of hard on me and my family a little bit. But I really like what I do, and I really don't, like, I just like hopping on a plane, doing something, going somewhere, being somewhere. And and I guess genetically I got blessed, because when I tell people I'm going to be 40 in a couple months, they're like, where? That does help. These things, they may be superficial, but that does help.
Yeah.
I also get assistance from people. Like, I form alliances and partnerships with people. Mm-hmm. So if like a new younger promoter, you know, I'll give them a free blast, I'll promote, mm-hmm. hey, put the logo, did it, I'll give them love, they give us love back. And so all of a sudden these younger promoters like Subsuelo or Solection or whoever they are, mm-hmm. like loving up on us, because even if we're not getting, they basically, what I always say is, you're not gonna get less people,
right?
So sure. I think it's keeping up. It's, thank God for the internet. I get thousands of emails a week with new music from all these publicists from all over the world. And I still trust my ear. But I am looking to, you know, do other things, more in the health and wellness space. I've come up with other ideas. Mm-hmm. And so my dream is to be able to get funding for either or both. And then be able to sort of, in a really nice organic way, let somebody about 15 years younger take over the day to day. That's my dream. And I know like people's kids that are good.
Yeah, sure.
That's the scary part. It would probably be like someone's kid.
Yeah.
You know, but honestly, like, it's people our age are still sort of at the forefront and are the media buyers, mm-hmm. and are still the decision makers. That's yeah. what's kept me. But yeah, we miss out on some stuff. There's some things that I'm like, damn, how do I not know about this? But right. it's like younger scene coming up. But I can still outdance anybody. So like, I'll be at the house club and these 24, 25 year olds getting tired and I'm still there. It's like 5 a.m. Like,
right.
where do you get this energy? And that, I don't know. That is, I mean, pure spirit, without sounding corny on any level, because I don't even know.
Yeah.
Maybe being almost vegan, I don't know, like okay. what it is.
Sure.
Yeah. But definitely I don't want to do this. I don't want to be like that chick that's like too old and then everyone's like, yo, you know, she's irrelevant. Like, what's up? You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that chick.
So how do you describe yourself? You've said two things about yourself.
Yeah.
That you're militant and you know, and you seem very dialed into your business.
Yes.
And you make hard decisions.
Yes.
About what to say no to.
Yeah.
And also, it sounds like you're pretty open to partnering with people and trusting.
Yes.
And all of that. So how do you balance those two things?
I think, you know, I really trust my ear in music. And if it's not whack, even if it's like something I've never heard or something that's a little like not my thing, I will. And because we're an online platform and within like 2 seconds, I can put you up on our site and, you know, share it on social and do other things. I really try to keep an open mind. But I still don't like a lot of, you know, I was just came back from Atlanta at A3C.
Yeah.
There was a lot of new hip hop that I was like, yo, this is the shit. Like young kids playing, they're like, you know, literally in front of just the building. Yeah. And yeah. there was other shit that I was just thought was whack, you know, right. and I think that's healthy. And I think these young kids, they look up. Like I was wearing my Dilla shirt because I was mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, you know I gotta wear this in Atlanta, right? And kids were like, oh my God, you know who Jay Dilla was? And I was like, I was his agent, you know? And I don't do that, but at A3C,
right.
you know, as a speaker,
yeah,
they were
yeah,
like,
sure.
oh my God. And my my little panel was well attended. I thought, because there was other things, there's so many other things
What'd
going on.
What did you talk about?
It was just meet the founder.
Oh, cool.
And people, I just told them like, kind of like this, like what I nice. Did, whatever. But I think it's like people, we were so ahead of our time in the music that we promoted and did in the mm-hmm. 90s and the thousands that it's still relevant sounding now. And I think that's why I've survived, because of what they did. Like,
sure.
I still don't think that there's like better music than that. Like, I will, you know, I try to be open, but then I'm like,
I've given up.
Yeah, I've given up a little bit, except for like the new, like the brass sounds of New Orleans. As you know,
yeah,
I'm obsessed
okay.
with that.
Yeah.
Like, I think Trombone Shorty is a star.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, I think, you know, and then being lucky, being on the forefront, like Anderson .Paak, you know, I've been working with him since the beginning of time when he mm-hmm. was Breezy Lovejoy, mm-hmm. which is a great name, by the way. and like, I'm lucky because maybe I don't work with him now. He's with Dre and he's bigger.
Yeah.
But if I ever needed anything.
Yeah, sure.
Right? If yeah. I needed that pull that card, yeah. I can pull that card, you know, I'm pretty sure. So mm-hmm. it is staying, it's being open, staying relevant, but also knowing that our music that we thrived on in the 90s and the early thousands was the best. I just think so.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, I mean, who, like, for instance, Fela Kuti died, what, 1997?
Yeah.
What, name me one Afro, you know what I'm saying? So it's old, but I think it's being rediscovered. Maybe because we're at the end of days. Because we're almost at Armageddon. I'm just kidding. No, it's not. We're good. We're straight. I told you I studied global climate change, right. So I just these past couple days I've been kind of
the more you know.
Well, there's been a lot of stuff, but yeah. Getting back to the music, I really do think it's because we were ahead of our time,
yeah.
And the music then is again. I go to these like underground loft parties. The average age is 25.
Yeah.
Okay, I am the oldest person besides the DJ and the promoter.
Yeah.
But they're going to see people we know.
Right.
They book our people.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So we're not irrelevant. We just have to stay on top and make sure that we also support that opening DJ
right. That's
opening for Moody Man or Theo Parrish or whoever it is, this old school guy from Detroit that the kids are like freaking out. But they also, what I've noticed, interestingly enough, the young kids don't really know who these DJs are. They're just mm-hmm. coming to the party. But wasn't that what we did? Did
yeah,
we
sure.
really know who these DJs yeah, were 20-something no. years ago? Like, we were just going it's to funny. The rave.
It's funny. So I was, for some reason this weekend, I was reminded about, like, my early clubbing days. And I started the same, you know, in high school.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you who any of those DJs were.
Exactly.
Right. And, like, we went to the parties, you know. And I was telling my wife about, like, I used to go to Club 1970s.
Oh, wow.
Which was, it was at the, what's the spot on La Brea in Hollywood?
Peanuts? Not Peanuts, but I think it was Peanuts later.
What it's called. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I forget what
it's like a gay club.
That's where Magic Wednesdays was.
Magic Wednesdays.
On La Brea. So, like, the backside of
where
the world.
Was I?
Which is not the world. Yeah, I forget what it's
called. Oh, okay, this is, like, in the 90s.
This was, like, 91.
Okay, oh, wow.
And, you know, we would pay to go in, didn't know anybody, and dance our ass off to 70s music. I have no idea who was DJing still to this day.
It was probably
Mike Messick or one of those guys,
yeah.
But I didn't know.
Exactly.
And that's not why I went.
Exactly.
And I just had the best time of my life. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
There's a lot of that. It wasn't until much later that we started, like, really caring about who the DJ is.
Exactly. And so I kind of count on that. And a lot of the times people go to Fusicology because they're like, what's up for tonight?
Yeah.
That's like the only reason to go to the website. That's actually, I did a lot of like interviews and video and stuff like that. And I kind of paused on that a little bit because it was very time consuming. And I noticed that my audience didn't really care. I would have to boost it and pay a lot of money to boost it in order for it to get the hits that it, because people, they go for the one thing. They go to find out what's cracking.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's fine. It's not, and I'm getting good traffic.
But I
mean,
that's
traffic.
Such wisdom. I don't know how to overstate that. Like, it is such wisdom to understand what people want from you
right.
and just give them that. And
like,
the temptations,
especially. And to have the ego to say, okay, this video from Redman should have gotten 30,000 views. It got like 2,000 views. But it's okay, you know, and I'm not willing to put $500 down to boost it on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
I'm just going to kind of chill on that because egotistically I'm like, I should get me. But then I'm like, I'm looking at my traffic. I'm like, oh, I get it. People are sort of flipping. They're just like, okay, cool interview with Redman, whatever.
Right.
I tried the content thing. I don't think we're a content-based website. I really think we're an informational sort of what, and because we're in real time,
mm-hmm.
we get traffic consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So the same person goes on our site about 3 days a week.
Wow.
That's unheard of these days, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't really do that with editorial websites unless you're TMZ and you're
so
constantly.
I want to go to these loft parties with you.
Yeah, you should.
But I also want you to have them around 6 p.m.
Yeah, see?
That's so I can get to bed. That's,
just take a nap and show up at 12:30 with me.
No,
I do that?
No, because I got to be up at 5:30.
On a Sunday?
Every day.
Hashtag no kids. Hashtag parenting. Yeah, it's cool. I'll just babysit yours once in a while. That's what I'm good at.
That's fantastic.
For like 3 hours and I'm over it.
Yeah, it's
done.
Great.
That's like cool. The minute they start to like get all fidgety and shit, I'm just
nah,
like,
he's old enough. He takes care of
okay, himself. Good. Even better. I'll totally hang out with him then.
So talk about 15th anniversary.
So we have, and we've been working on it for almost a year now. Just a little bit of hiccups, but nothing that anyone saw. It's all in production. We are having a brand new website. When I say brand new, I mean we are moving from PHP database to a WordPress back end. Mm-hmm. So right now we're like WordPress front end,
mm-hmm.
but the back end is all PHP, which is, it's just not user friendly anymore, right?
Sure.
But if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. The good news is that we're not like, we don't have a bad website right now, so mm-hmm. we haven't been rushing it. The new site is going to be awesome. It's also going to equate to a new app because it's completely just everything is mobile. So we don't have to switch out the app at all. We just kind of link it to a different page, mm-hmm. you know, for featured events mm-hmm. and call it a day. That is going to be up very, very soon. We are in the final stages of the UI UX. We just needed to redesign. It's going to be very clean. That's a big deal for me. For live event wise, in LA, we are doing Louis Vega is performing live with EOL Sofrito with his lovely wife Anane Vega, Joshua Milan, and then a bunch of other special guests that are going to be here. That week in New York, I'm going to be partaking in two events that Tony Touch is doing called Funk Box and Toca Tuesdays.
Nice.
Louis Vega on Wednesday night. Thursday, Robert Glasper at Blue Note. He has a residency. That night is going to be with Terrace Martin. So I figure that's just a perfect fit for us because we're LA based. But yeah. I did think of my company in New York City. Because I think that it wouldn't have existed if I didn't think of it in New York, you know?
Sure.
And then on that Friday is going to be an event called Soul in the Horn, which is a very, very popular like live jazz fusion event that happens at different locations and you don't know until a few days out on whatever Friday cool. is chosen, by the way. It's not every Friday. So it's very tricky.
I love it.
It's great. But you have big, big people coming up and playing just impromptu sets and, you know, crazy like D Nice will DJ and then like someone will come up and play the trumpet and it's just all across the board. So New York is going to be like a bit of a mishmash here. I'm doing one event. I figure that's kind of actually represents LA and New York a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, here to get people out, you almost have to plan it and it's going to be like central time, place, whatever. Otherwise, oh, I live in Santa Monica. I'm not going to that club in Hollywood. Oh, I live downtown. I'm not going to the West Side. You know, so.
LA is tough.
LA is really tough. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are the plans. And then I'm starting a lifestyle sort of experiential health and wellness. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. And it's because I have a deck ready. I have all these ideas for this new company. But then I want to implement cannabis, but I have to be careful because it's not legal nationally.
Right.
So I'm almost creating it's going to be called Fuse Life.
Okay.
So it's kind of the play on the word fuse ecology, but easier to spell, easier to right. say. And also, I think people understand the word life. It's more of it's fusing your lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I think that we all have to implement more health and wellness. I do get tired of going to the club or the bar or the conference and not having anything but sugar water, mm-hmm. tap water, and alcohol. I believe that we can develop areas where there could be pods where people can come in and there could be wheatgrass shots, you can go get your phone charged, you can get a back rub, you know, these conferences. That's one thing that I've noticed is everyone gets so tired.
Yeah.
So I want to develop health and wellness in an experiential way,
mm-hmm.
and then where it's legal, combine that with cannabis. So we're going to launch that during, hopefully, God willing, during the Consumer Electronics Show in January.
Nice.
Yeah, with a small like part of an event, not like our own event, but just to see how it goes, and then looking for funding, and then hopefully by this time next year, I won't be doing Fusicology 80% and Fuse Life 20%. It'll be sort of turned around. So mm-hmm. that's my dream. That's the goal for me as a person. But Fusicology, I don't think, besides a new site and what we're doing and just pushing it, I see it growing consistently, but like I said, I see it growing more in the market sense. Like, mm-hmm. like right now we're not in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. We're not in like anywhere like Nashville, but you know what? Every day I hear about things popping up in different markets that we're not in. So I want to be everywhere. I want to be everywhere.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing.
Yeah. Thanks.
Let me see. I have a little lightning round I want to ask you. Okay. What's your favorite city to travel to?
New Orleans.
Nice.
Music, food, people, atmosphere. Yeah. I've become a different person for a couple days. It's great.
So great.
Yeah, it's the best.
I remember you took me to Trumpet Mafia.
Yeah.
Which was what a cool thing.
It was so cool. In the middle of the park for free on a Wednesday. We'll be right back. part of the conference we were at, and they didn't even care.
Right.
It was just Wednesdays in the Park, New Orleans. Yeah, yeah. Let's go. Love it. Best city in the world.
So cool.
Yeah. Well, in North America, in the world, that's hard, but in North America for sure.
Where do you like outside of the U.S.?
Hawaii. I think it's magical. I'm kind of sad about everything that's going on.
That's not outside the U.S.
Oh, wait. Oh, you're right. Outside
that's
of the
right.
U.S.
It's okay to love Hawaii.
Well, Japan's the coolest place to me. Yeah. Like, I'm kind of obsessed with it. But to be super mellow, Bali.
Wow.
In general, I love Asia. I love Asian food.
What's the place you've been most surprised about, like, the scene?
I would say the scene. In the U.S. or just in general?
Wherever.
I would have to say Atlanta, because I always thought it was like mainstream and like it's all across the board, and there's a little bit of everything, and there's like everything from, you know, rock, like sort of, you know, grassroots kind of indie stuff, all the way to Lil Wayne, but everything in between. And I didn't realize just how massive it was.
Yeah.
And even like the trap music has like soul to it. Mm-hmm. And like, I just find it to be the most, the largest US city that doesn't get enough props for it being what it is. Everyone thinks of it as like just sort of this mainstream, but it's not. It's amazing. It's got a great house music scene.
Yeah.
It's got a great like reggae scene. I think Atlanta is like the best music scene outside of Los Angeles in this country. I would say it's better than New York right now.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was amazed. Last year I was in Tokyo,
mm-hmm.
and I went to Massive Attack.
Yeah.
And just seeing how they got down to it, and like, first of all, you know, it was like 4,000 people in a amphitheater or in like a warehouse kind of. And no cameras.
Right.
Like until the end of at the end of the show, people are taking pictures, but for 80% of the show, there's no cameras out.
That's amazing.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
People just dancing.
That's amazing.
Really cool.
Yeah. I haven't been in Japan.
Young Fathers opened up.
Really?
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot. Actually, another one is, it would be Johannesburg and in general South Africa. Like, again, people think it's going to be what it is, but you come up there and there's like wealthy people that do their thing, and then you have the Soweto, and then you have like all these like South African, and how big house is, like how like superstar-ish house is. I mean, I wasn't as surprised, but it's pop music there. Like the taxi cab drivers be playing.
Is that right?
House music, yeah, and like that's good cool. house music, not what we think is house music.
Sure.
Yeah, they laugh at us, I think, because we created it,
right.
But they took it and made it better.
Sure.
And house music did come from Chicago. People will argue to the death, like it came from Europe or New York. And I'm like, what do you know? It was Chicago. And I can send you the first house record that ever came out. I think it was 1982. Uh-huh. What are you talking about? It was 1982, yeah, because house music celebrated 35 years last year.
Which record is that?
It's probably Gotta Have House, but Jesse Saunders said that he created it. I argue with him. It's between Jesse Saunders and the things that like Frankie Knuckles was doing. It's kind of, it was all in the same like year.
Yeah.
But I think Jesse Saunders would be proud to know that I kind of agree that, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Who's your favorite DJ?
Well, I would say technically the best DJ for me probably is still Jazzy Jeff. Like, mm-hmm. I'm in awe of him. I'm always like, are you for real? But my favorite DJ, like who I really want to hear, believe it or not, is probably Rich Medina, because he plays everything, and he plays it well, and he plays the house and the Afro funk and the hip hop, and he's incredible. Spinna is like my number three, because Spinna's sort of there, but I don't know, I teeter. But Jazzy Jeff, technically, no one can beat him to this day. I mean, I'm just like, whatever on all y'all.
For sure.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Still like, and he's like in his 50s.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's the last great book you read?
I've been reading a lot. I only read books about like climate change and self-help.
Fun.
I'm trying to think of what it's called. Millionaire's Mind, actually. I just read it, which was really, really good. Sort of had to just think positive all the time and how rich people think differently than middle class people. And I felt good about it because I felt like I didn't think like a poor person, but I still learned a lot, you know what I mean? But Millionaire's Mind is a really, really good book, especially if anyone's in a bit of a creative rut, you know, or just in general.
Nice, I'm going to read it.
Yeah, it's really good. I'll give it to you if you want.
What movie have you seen the most in your life?
Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Fucking love it. Nice. It's the best, man, because he's always in the right place at the right time. And I felt like that's my life. Like, people will be like, you did this? And I'm like, man, I was just, you know, or I'll be next to somebody on the airplane or I'll meet somebody. And that happens to me so much.
Yeah.
I really relate. And I also love, like, how it showed, like, the different times of that era, you know? I just love that movie. I can watch it all the time. It's really bad. It's embarrassing. You'd think it was like maybe some like more whatever cooler movie.
It never is. No one ever answers that question.
No, like, really? No. Okay. Like Forrest Gump, really? Yeah, really. Tom Hanks killed it.
So funny.
Yeah.
It's funny how our Raymond and I used to argue about this, how like our taste in music and movies is not necessarily connected at all.
Right.
But you would kind of think it is. I've always tried to like define my taste in music and I can't. Like I want to say I like this kind of music and not that, which I realize is a stupid thing to do anyway.
It is.
I'm tempted to and I can't.
It depends on the mood. I mean, if you would say to me though, if I had to listen to like one kind of music for like 8 hours or something, it would be African house music. You know, but if I, but then I'm like missing out on all of like Brand Nubian and all this like other stuff that I really like. And then I'd be like, well, what about all the jazz stuff that I really, really like? And then some of the other like weirder shit, like the Flylo stuff that I really like. So it's really like, you know what I mean? It's across the board. But, and Sun, like, you know, Sun Ra and like the even more eclectic, weirder stuff that like, but I can't listen to that for 8 hours. South African house, though, I think I actually can. 8 hours of straight watch me like that. Be like, put her in a room. I'll go crazy.
We should test that.
I'll be like, no more drums. No more drums.
Well, I find I wake up most days with a song playing in my head.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's something really esoteric that whatever, and I'll put it on and my wife will be like, what's that?
That's cool.
And then sometimes it's some cheesy pop song from when I was a kid and I just put that on and like, oh yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, whatever.
Yeah, music is all about moods and all about like how you feel at that point, you know. I love, you know, I didn't mention this, but I love Tool and I love Soundgarden and Nine Inch Nails and all of that. And I grew up on that. Sometimes I will want to listen to like, you know, but that's like, get a mood.
Yeah,
sure. Like if I'm in traffic,
totally.
You know, I might put some Tool on and I'll get all like, rawr, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Absolutely. So tell me one decision to change your life forever.
Moving to LA in 2000, you know, I did it on a whim. You know, I didn't really know anybody here. I didn't really have a job. I just got my green card. I was like, but I just knew that I needed to be here. You know, I knew it. And I'm really, really glad that I made that decision.
Complete the sentence. I don't have talent. I have blank.
I don't have talent. I have people skills. I'm really good with people. I can make people feel very comfortable.
That's important.
Mm-hmm.
So if I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
Customer service. A lot of people just don't understand even the simplest things about putting up an event, how to feature it. And if you become bitchy and become kind of snappy, I let you go. Yeah. You have to have patience. Even if it's the same client every 6 months asking for the same media kit link, whatever, hey, no worries. And also get back to people right away.
Totally.
Because if you don't get back to them, they're just going to spend that extra $300 on Facebook.
Right.
Because they were waiting for you to come and boost it. And they'll, oh, sorry, next time. No, you got to get back to people immediately. So I don't believe in that whole like, oh, only check emails every couple of times a day. No, I'm on email all day. Constantly. And I don't mind. Like, to me, email, but I don't really like talking on the phone.
Yeah.
It's not my thing.
Me too.
Oh, I can't. I'm like, what?
You ever have those people, you email them or text them and then they call you?
Yes.
Like, no, that's not.
Yes.
Don't, let's
or
not
like
do that.
Even my business partner in Atlanta, when I just, I mean, I appreciate him calling, but like we didn't have this time set, right? We didn't say like, let's talk right. at the Pacific Standard. It's I'm big on like calendars, setting things up.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and then I have like the 5-minute notice. Oh yeah, I got to call him. And then I get into that zone.
Totally.
Maybe reread the email. You know what I'm talking about? I don't do the whole just call me thing. Cause then I have to get into your mode.
Yeah.
No, I'm really good on that.
Same here.
Definitely.
Who would you be most excited to learn appreciates your work?
You know what? I've always looked up to Rob Stone, and I tried to meet him at 83C, but he was surrounded by security, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to know if, like, does Cornerstone Fader even know who we are? Does he know what we've done? Because I've always been, like, looking up to him,
yeah.
You know? And to me, he's the ultimate publisher. Like, the ultimate, what he did with Cornerstone, with the, you know, mm-hmm. conglomerate, with all the publishers. Just, you know, it's different kind of genre-wise, but I believe I'm, like, a baby Rob Stone, like a super baby Rob Stone. But that would be that person. Celebrity-wise, I would say Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Because I've sort of been around him and around his people for a while, but obviously I have no idea if he, like, you know, cares or whatever, but it would be interesting to know just someone on that level if, like,
sure.
I don't know, you know what I mean? Do they even care? I guess he's never seen the website. It's a horrible thing to say, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, something like that. Someone like that, definitely. But definitely Rob Stone on a publisher level. I'm a fan. I've never met him.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Awesome.
Yeah, that was Ozzy Ashine on Rebel Radio. Make sure you check out Fusicology if you feel like getting out and doing some clubbing. Make sure you leave us a review or a comment on iTunes or on Twitter. Check out, you can check out Rebel Radio on Spotify. We're now up on Spotify if that's your thing. And all those things are Rebel Radio Net. Twitter.com/Rebel Radio Net. Facebook, YouTube. Wherever you go, Rebel Radio is there. That's how we do it. Most importantly, come back next week and check out more Rebel Radio. Peace.